Okay, thank you. Thank the organizers for this opportunity. So actually, as you see, I start with a problem. This problem was raised in Nature just a year or two ago by Guy Deutsche, and I was exposed to it by coming to a meeting of all of the people who do SNS junctions and Josephson junction tunneling and so on. And this was kind of an open problem that they raised, and they were using a theory by Clapper, Blonder, and Pinkham, very famous in that crowd. I mean, I would say they used that theory for the same respect as BCS theory. These BTK or KBT is a very commonly used acronym there. I'll explain that theory and I'll say why I believe it fails quite drastically in the cool plates and why we need to do something more suitable for the correlations that we know exist there. And this will be I try to push this projected SO5 approach, which I guess in the wars between different approaches, it's always the question of which approximation is more useful rather than who is right and who is wrong. So I think this is actually a very useful approximation for this particular problem and others as well. So the two papers that one of them is on CONMAT with my student Eric Altman, and there's a previous paper that a lot of the technical details of the projected SO5 was exposed. It's kind of a paper that I noticed went a bit unnoticed, so I might digress and explain what's in there, even though that's not the main topic here. So the experiment. Okay, the two gap problem that Guy Deutsche raises is the following. It's mostly in tunneling and also in SNS junctions. They look at the tunneling IV curve, they find a gap, which is they call a pseudo gap. It's correlated quite nicely with the other experiments on pseudo gaps, photon emission, NMR, C-axis tunneling, and so on. Then they do a different experiment, and they're passing a Josephson current, looking at what's called oscillations in the Josephson conductance in SNS junction, and they find a different energy scale that, according to the existing BCS theory or BTK theory, should also correspond to a superconducting gap, but that gap is a different value, and also, when they plot it versus doping in different systems, scale differently on the doping than the tunneling gap. So they call it the two gap problem. Because in BCS theory there was only one gap, and here apparently two gaps. So
can you remind us a little bit about the junction? Which material is this?
I'll go into the detail.
Oh, okay.
You'll see the experiment. So then Deutsche kind of lumped up a lot of different phenomena, those that follow the pseudo gap and those that follow this other energy scale that follows TC, that follows these peaks follow, and the superfluid stiffness, and they look like they scale differently with doping and perhaps coinciding in doping and doping. And the question is, what's going on? Just to remind you, the geometry of the tunneling is some normal or some metal tip going into a superconductor rather than the SNS, which is a superconductor. Something normal, quotation marks, I will discuss that soon, into another superconductor that shows a different gap. Now, a very nice experiment was done at the Technion, which I flashed in the meeting, is this. It's a Gatt-Cohen's experiment on SNS junctions. This is the sample. They have thin films of IPCO. This is underdoped, actually. There's some layer which is poorly conducting. I can't really determine its conducting properties, but it's not a superconductor. It's IPCO with iron doping. And on the other side, there's another IPCO film. And these are very good films, and these junctions show the following IVDI characteristics. See, there are these peaks here, and the peaks are very sharp. That's one thing to notice. And they form this kind of a scale which, when plotted versus 1/n, looks like a very nice straight line. So They are related to phenomena that people call multiple Andrea reflections. Now, that energy scale happens to be in the lump of energy scales called the coherence energy scale, not the pseudo gap. So it's part of the two gaps problem. The relation that gives you this kind of a straight line is that the voltages of the peaks go like 2 delta being the BCS gap in a BCS theory divided by En, n being an integer running between 1, 2, and 3 and higher. And that's the question. Why is this energy scale very different than the energy scale seen in Kahneman? And this is what I want to address here.
Can you remind us what would you expect if you have a new wave BCS superconductor in these two experiments?
Okay. Several problems. One of them, the energy scale doesn't fit. Second, if it was a D wave, well, it is a D wave, one would not expect sharp peaks. This sharpness in the BTK formulation comes from the singularity of the BCS density of states in an S wave superconductor. So you expect much weaker singularity. In fact, when they look at this data relative to conventional superconductors, this is much sharper than observed in a conventional S-wave superconductor. So it goes the opposite way in terms of sharpness. Now one could say perhaps we're looking at the D-wave gap in some particular angle, but that will require perfect alignment of both this superconductor and this superconductor in terms of the axes that they don't have, and perfect order, and that they don't believe they have. So this is strange. Why is it so singular? The D-wave density of state is not singular.
What is this depression below N equal 4? I mean, it looks like the actual gap, right, in which this other structure is riding on top of, but it's pretty small. It's 10 millivolts, right?
I can't answer.
This is the point. They have no clue.
This is the data.
What's causing this depression around zero bias, right?
Right.
In 10 millivolts.
I would just concentrate on the position of the peaks and all the background I was associated with.
So what's the spike in zero bias?
Probably this is a remnant of the kind of supercurrent, right? Because this is a VDI, so that's like zero resistance at zero voltage.
Joseph's bias and
you used to see the IDV.
Huh? Oh, I see. It's DB. Yeah.
Asa, I just want to be sure you answered Gabby's question. So if I had a D-wave DCS superconductor,
yeah,
I would expect spikes at delta max and multiples of that. Is that what you're telling me?
No, I'd expect in the multiple. I'll go through the theory.
I'm just asking BCS theory.
But using the KBT theory, yeah, on top of that, which is like a semiconductor transport theory, you should get 2 delta divided by En.
Okay.
So it's a subgap
delta
structure.
Max?
Well, this will be delta of the BCS S wave. So in a D wave, you won't get sharp peaks. You will get whatever singularity there is in the D wave density of state, which is very weak.
So would you get a log at delta max?
Yeah, but even this, even for an S wave, it's so difficult to see anything even in solutions of the BTK theory that one cannot believe that this comes from sharp D-wave. What?
Longer
Tinkham and Clapper. As I say, it's a very famous
acronym. Check that transparency and flip it over. So if this is standard DIDB, so
yeah,
these little peaks actually correspond to suppressions in the conductance,
right,
rather than,
right,
that.
Yeah, but okay, but this is differential conductance. So
in this bump in the middle, this is just a standard Andrea bump that you see in a normal S-N junction?
Again, I don't want to discuss the background. I just want to discuss the position of the peaks.
But I'm sure there's bias anomalies and all this at your junctions, edges?
The actual peak here,
yeah,
it's a zero bias anomaly or it's a remnant of a supercurrent, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
So conventional superconductors would have 2 wings on this upside down block. Is that correct? I just want to make sure more.
The
wings in the Joseph.
Okay. Go back. Let's go back to theory.
Like that. Okay.
This is a tunneling curve. The IDD, not the VDI.
Okay.
And that's for D wave. And the other positions that the pseudo gap comes in are photo emissions, the size of the gap at pi zero versus pi five.
I thought there was also tunneling.
What? This is tunneling.
What you just showed before is also tunneling.
No, that's an SNS. Superconductor, normal superconductor. So I'm ejecting Cooper pairs, not electron from one side. So it's a different. Yeah, they're somewhat, the thin films grown. No, they're not perfect. Right, they don't believe that it's perfectly aligned, that you're pointing in a particular angle. So that's, they rule that out by.
But it's not only C axis up.
No, no, this is in the AB plane.
But
going
I mean,
into the AB plane.
So you're tunneling this way, but the films
right.
are normally oriented this way.
Yes. Yes. No, very important. We're tunneling AB to AB, but not aligned.
I guess you'd say that even though you call this a pseudo gap, right?
Yeah.
This energy scale is the same as a quasi particle peak location and the coherence peak location.
Right.
In the supernatant state,
right.
tunneling and
pulling. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm showing you, that this is the same energy scale as a photo emission.
But the previous one wasn't.
Right, the previous one wasn't, so I'm going to argue it's a different thing. So I want to kind of come back to a bit of a understanding, let's say, that some in the community have about what's going on in the Yandu-Doppler gene. There's this energy scale which is essentially, if you look at this and you kind of think of it as a pairing energy scale, is coming down with doping. There is another energy scale, which is superfluid stiffness, and TC that's related to it, that's coming up with doping. And these are the two energy scales I argue that exist. However, we'll find out that they give rise to some important collective modes. The, let's say, state of theory to explain why this goes up and this comes down, I said there's a simple-minded way of explaining it, is that it's essentially phase fluctuations and a Costa-Lizzi-Thales transition where TC goes like rho S, and the Hamiltonian is essentially a phase fluctuating Hamiltonian, charge 2E. There's a another relation, which is that the superconducting stiffness itself increases with doping X. That you can explain in different methods, slave bosons and other methods. Simple-minded way that experimentalists have been using, actually, which I like, is to say, well, the carriers are whole pairs, and there's both condensation of whole pairs, and the stiffness, if you assume that the hopping of the whole pairs is more or less a constant number, would be essentially related to the density of whole pairs. And that's kind of a simple-minded explanation of why TC and rho S go up with X. So I say nothing needed for special new theory for there. But there are two other effects that I claim the projected SO5 theory will help answer. One of them is the anti-ferromagnetic resonance, which is a new energy scale not appearing in these graphs, that goes up with X, but not as X, but the square root of X. It's related to the appearance of superconductivity, but it's not exactly the same energy scale. And that's the anti-ferromagnetic resonance we know at 41 MeV at optimal doping, but we know under doped it comes down. And another thing, the projected SO5 theory that I'll describe later will explain those peaks that we've seen before. And hence, if you go back and look at the peaks, miraculously, they are exactly at very close to 40 MeV, the first peak.
Yeah, but this is 6.6 sample, right?
No, so it's not 40 MeV, it's 33 or 32. But it, and it comes down. That's what they I showed in the previous graph. So I claim that these peaks have nothing to do with pair breaking. The KBT theory is not applicable here. It has nothing to do with the pseudo gap. It has to do with excitation of magnon pairs. And this is why high TC is very interesting, because there's interaction between the spin degrees of freedom and the Cooper pairs as charges that would allow such a phenomenon to occur and to observe in a transport measurement a neutron type peak that you can only see in a magnetic type probe before. So I'll explain why this is very natural.
Is there any reason why they use this barrier with iron there?
No.
Since
no. But they observe.
If you put a standard barrier, you see the same effect.
Yeah. Well, Deutscher showed the collection of many data, not just from the Technion group, with different barriers and any kind of, he's the one who did the digesting. So let me go back to BTK theory, which is actually is a very interesting theory. A lot of people are looking at it now in the context of mesoscopics. And it's interesting to think about this theory in the context of high-PC. Because BTK wants to have two superconductors, perfect DCS density of state with a squared singularity at the edge, and a normal metal, which they approximate with some free gas, maybe it has some impurities in it. There's some parameters related to the transmission and reflection here. And the processes, just if you want to look at the bottom line, the processes that contribute to the VDI are ones where Cooper pairs start from one side, they get energy difference V, they come to the other side, they want to join the condensate, which is now shifted down by the potential difference, they have to lose energy. So you need to have some final states. But they don't have any final states here. But they can under reflect until they merge out at a density of states which allows them to decay. So what the process is actually, if you think about in terms of charge, you're taking, in this case, three Cooper pairs from the left, moving them to the right, gaining 6 EV, and that's exactly enough to dissociate a Cooper pair into two quasi-particles and give you a dissipative process contributing to the conductance. Now, why is it a singular contribution? Because the singularity of density of states of the VCS here. There are two processes allowed by BTK, and this is very important. One of them is where an even number of electrons move from left to right, and one of them where an odd number of electrons move to left to right. In this process, the overall charge that moves from left to right is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But how can you move Cooper pairs this way? Well, you notice that if you look at it again from the bottom line point of view, you actually moved across two Cooper pairs, but one of them dissociated so that one quasiparticle go to the right and one quasiparticle go to the left, and therefore you obtain a peak at an odd denominator, exactly like here you obtain with even denominator. For this you need the two gaps to be exactly the same, and you need to have two BCS superconductors. So this is the BTK odd and even effect. And as you see there, this is the theory. You don't have very sharp peaks in the theory. This is experiment. Say that it really fits very nicely. It's hard, but it's been studied since then. This is a very old paper. Studied since then in many, many systems. And it's accepted as a very good starting point. Of course, it's a complicated theory to actually get the VDI, because you have to do solve a couple of Boltzmann equations and so on. But the main process is this one. Now, I argue that this is completely inapplicable to high TC. First, there's no such thing as a real nice free gas in the middle. It's just another underdog Cooper. Second, the most important thing, the singular process here involves dissociating a Cooper pair into two quasi-particles, and especially the odd series, the two quasi-particles are flying in different superconductors. Now, if I assume that the pseudo-gap physics is pairing, then I don't want to allow final states with a large density of states, especially not a singular density of states, for dissociation. I would allow collective excitations, like the magnons, like the anticholinergic resonance, or the pi resonance in the SFI theory. So this is why this theory is very suspect. Now this theory will tell you that the gap is exactly the same gap as you would see in the pseudo-gap measurements. That's the dissociation of pairs, tunneling, both emissions, so.
And why aren't there competing channels such as quasi-particles, tunneling of quasi-particles from one side to the other? Why can't we neglect those?
In the D-wave or here?
Even here.
Here there's no available states. It's an idealized system. No impurities, no magnetic.
But
so nothing can come in except if
it's... At temperatures, you have some excited quasi-particles.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
From side to side.
All this smears out at finite temperatures and becomes eventually... At TC goes away.
So this is a theory of TC for very low temperatures.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So actually it's a probe for the correlations of the superconductor. So I just mentioned the problems again. BTK theory assumes weak coupling VCS superconductors connected by Fermi gas, no pseudo gap phenomenon. The singular conductance is due to the squared singularity of S wave. No sharp singularity for D-wave is expected. and that's perfectly aligned, I believe. Andreev gap should scale with the pseudo gap and not with low C, contrast to experiments. Okay, so this is the problem then. Right, now, why does this... So now I can talk about theory. Now I'm allowed to talk about my pet theory. Okay, here's the following. The theory I want to propose is called projected SO5. It's different in very many ways than the SO5 theory, the original SO5 theory, but it shares some common features. I would say the basic common feature it shares is that the SO5 theory and the projected SO5 theory is a theory of bosonic collective modes that are common to both the antiferromagnet and the superconductor. Now, the simple route to get to the bosonic theory, and one name for the theory actually which I like better than projected SO5 is the four boson model. This is the model I want to get to. It has essentially hole pairs moving around with some hopping of the hole pairs. There's no double occupied sites here. And there are magnons. The magnons reflect the physics of the Heisenberg model. Okay? This is a way of writing the Heisenberg model in terms of triplets where I have to define the vacuum. The vacuum I define as singlets. So it's a, the simplest thing is to explain it on a ladder. On a ladder, I can take each rung and write an SO5 multiplet you want, a singlet, three triplets, two empty sites, and two double occupied sites. And these are all, relative to this, excitations that I can mark with the hardcore bosons. That boson statistics, the charge 2e here, and charge minus 2e here. Now this model will explain, let's say, the system at half filling without the chemical potential, and the energy scale for these two is a voltage U, and this is a voltage J. But if I add a chemical potential, which is what I do when I dope the system, I can bring down one of them, and the other one I can project out of the spectrum. So I'm left with four bosons. These are the four bosons here. The three triplets and the whole pair. Superconductivity will be given by a linear combination of the singlet and the whole pair. Antiferromagnetism will be given by a linear combination of one of the triplets and the singlet. So you can think of the two orders that exist in these systems as just Bose condensation. And in fact, there's competing Bose condensation of the two types of bosons, which give you the phase diagram. This description of the ladder, by the way, for the Heisenberg model is completely faithful. In other words, my full Hilbert space, this is something pointed out by, well, Eder, who's the one who worked on it the most, and others, it's a perfectly fine way to solve the Heisenberg model on the ladder is to take a basis where each rung is either a singlet or a triplet, and to discuss the hopping of the triplets, and there's also an anomalous part that creates two triplets on neighboring rungs, and to just solve that hardcore boson model. It's not perhaps the most useful way for solving the Heisenberg model on the ladder, but it's a faithful representation. Adding holes as pairs on rungs is not completely faithful to the original TJ model or Hubbard model because it doesn't allow the holes to dissociate. But at least the collective mode related to superconductivity is well represented by these bosons, which also move around, and they have interactions between them and the triplets. There's a hardcore interaction. You can't have a triplet and a hole pair at the same site. So for the ladder model, this is a four boson representation of the superconducting and antiferromagnetic fluctuations, which could be solved. If there's a hardcore constraint here, it has to be solved by slate bosons or by making a soft interaction. So this was given for the ladder. However, for two dimensions...
Why do you leave out the interaction between these two?
Why do I need interactions?
Why do you leave out the interaction between...
No, there's a hardcore constraint. There's a strong...
Between the boson, between the charge and the whole pair and the triplets, there's a...
Yeah. Right. There's more interactions. There's more interactions, but... Okay, if I take... Okay, this is an approximation. where I take the number of triplets and the number of bosons to be small. So it's kind of the interaction between the triplets and the whole pairs would be reduced in that limit. It's a limit of very.
If you have a bond state, you bind.
They bind as an excitation. Okay.
The pair and the triplet will bind.
Okay, we have to discuss that. I think that for the, well, the ground state of this model is a spin gap phase because of this interaction, the plankton's get a spin gap, and there's just a condensate of the whole test. So it's a superfluid. Of course, if you add fluctuations among dimensions, it becomes power law. But this is simple-minded. There are perhaps higher-order interactions that give you some interesting excited states, but I think for the phase diagram, this is enough. No, the triplets are there, but this bound state that you're talking about, okay, I have to think about it. Okay. But anyways, so this is like a model for the ladder. And this model, however, is not easily extended to two dimension, but that's what my student Eld Altman and I is doing. Actually, this is his thesis. So I'm showing you unpublished work, but it's actually very natural to generalize the two dimensions if you abandon the idea of a run on a ladder and use plaquettes. And actually, a lot of physics comes in there. Some of it was mentioned in the conference, but I'll repeat it. You take the four-site Hubbard model, and you look at its ground state. Actually, take the four-site Heisenberg, to be simple, at half filling. The ground state looks like two kinds of singlet configurations on dimers with a minus sign. This is in the notation using fermions, not Schringer bosons, using fermions. So there's a relative minus sign, and that's just Heisenberg physics. If you put two holes on a plaquette, well, it turns out that it has this kind of a wave function, and the relative phase between two holes and a vacuum is D wave. Okay? So D wave simply comes out of that, as people have said, Dr. Tarpino mentioned many times. But now my local pair has already D-wave symmetry on a plaquette. And another nice thing it has pair binding on a plaquette. So it actually exists on a plaquette. It doesn't exist on a run, but it exists on a plaquette as a low-lying excitation. So this is my whole pair boson. The three magnons still exist. They are actually the lowest triplet excitations of a plaquette, and they can hop around. And the charge part looks like in a ladder. It's a hopping and an on-site term. The spin part, again, represents the Heisenberg model in two dimensions. This will have, in the absence of holes, it'll have long-range order. There'll be Bose condensation of one of the triplets. And there's an interaction, which here, I soften it and I write it in terms of some hot potential W between the holes and the triplets. And on top of that, there are nodal fermions. Okay, there's also fermion excitations of three electrons on a plaquette. Now, all I'm interested in for the experiment, and that's all I'm going to discuss, is actually the effect of the spin and the charge on the transport to a SNS junction.
I'm
going to
ask you something.
Yes.
This is for the 2D test, because there is not a unique covering of the 2D plane with these plaquettes.
Right. So, this is a technical question. These singlets here represent, if you want, some RVB state. But you notice that it's not the full RVB state because I don't have dimers connecting the plaquettes as part of my ground state. I'm using it as the vacuum. I'm not using it as the ground state. My vacuum is a building block for my Fock space. These interactions, as you can see, mix different Fock states. So if I had all the interactions correctly, I'll solve the interactions on this translational symmetry breaking basis, I'll get a translational invariant RVB state. Or depending, I mean, I could get the long range order phase depending on the parameters of the spin part. So I'm not bothered by this arbitrary breaking of translation symmetry in my construction. Okay? You want, it's the same thing happening in the ladder too. So, first thing to do is see what mean field theory gives on this model. It's a bosonic model, mean field theory is simple. And, well, I repeat the fact that when you have a whole pair and a singlet together, I get a triplet in the z direction, which is this way, plus the singlet, I get an L state. If I both condense, I get superposition of whole pairs and the vacuum, I get a superconductor. And here I have the phase diagram coming from mean field theory. And you notice the following facts, that actually, I think it's one of the few calculations of the phase diagram, all the parameters, a function of doping, so easy to get. This is actually a function of chemical potential. The magnetic moment does not change as a function of chemical potential until you reach a critical value. And then there is a first order transition into a superconductor, okay, in the model. And rho s doesn't really start at zero. It starts at some finite value. Actually, this looks a bit like the corrected phase diagram that it was showing. And another interesting thing is that the magnon gap actually vanishes and increases the square root. So I think a lot of work has been done on this point. This is where stripes come in, spin glasses, disorder-dominated physics. It's clear from this mean field theory why that happens. It's a first-order transition. A first-order transition cannot happen as a function of chemical potential in a charged Coulomb system. It must be substituted with patterns, with stripes, with frustrated phase separation, because you cannot have phase separation. So this is where all the other stuff comes in. And I'm interested here not as a function of doping, as a function of chemical potential, so I'll actually ignore this particular point.
So in the mean field theory, did you allow for both types of condensation, or you only allowed for a triplet or a whole pair?
The mean field theory is for both type of uniform.
You could have a mixed condensate?
You could, in the mean field theory, put any structure you want to study it. I did study. No, I didn't study patterned or stripes or different kinds of mean field theory, just uniform. And there it's the first order transition. In other words, the energy just jumps between, the energy doesn't jump, the all the parameter just jumps between both condensation of one to both condensation of the other. No. But you would have that, of course, if you had long range interactions. Because any first order transition, as we know from the XXZ model, spin flop transition, you add nearest neighbor and next nearest neighbor interaction, it turns into second order. And the second order actually means a lot of interpolating phases in the ground state between.
More example, you know, rather than having to spin that to swap uniform anti-paramagnetic superconducting, whether it can go continuously through intermediate states,
yeah,
that are also uniform. And I think that probably there are some parameters in the field theory where that can happen, but they're not going to be considered.
Right. The parameters that turn you to a second order transition would be longer range interactions. That's actually experienced from the XXZ model in the magnetic field. So.
You can have coexistence.
Well, here no, but as I said, with long range interactions, yes. And those coexist.
So without long range interactions?
No.
Why not?
Well, what do you mean by coexistence? This point
then
here.
The two bosons condense.
Right, that would be. That will be broadening this point.
Yes.
Right. That could happen with long range interactions, not in the simple mean field theory. But it will happen, of course, physically because of longer range Coulomb interactions. But as I said, all these intermediate phases and are expected. They're not.
If you start to think of it, I just want to understand what are the terms which are important. If you start with a simple Landau-Ginzburg theory where you have, say, two masses, one for the magnetism and one for the superconductivity, you could imagine that both condense.
Right.
And then you have a phase where you have coexistence.
Yeah.
Which is uniform.
Which would be uniform.
Absolutely.
Now, in your model, that doesn't happen.
Right.
Presumably because you have additional terms which are like repulsive interactions. All this can be understood in terms of Landa Ginsburg. So
yeah.
The question is what terms
which
are important just... and prevent from the coexistence?
No, as I said, the simple model that I wrote before with essentially two parameters gives a first order transition. Add longer range interactions, it will quickly go away. And you'll get a much more complicated phase diagram, broadening this point out, because right, this point actually represents complete degeneracy as a function of doping, which is not physical. So there's nothing so mysterious about that.
You pair electrons in an antiferromagnet is equivalent to mixing one of these pi modes in with a ground state.
Yeah.
That's what they're saying. And this came up in the magnetic superconductor problem years ago.
No, the fact you can have coexistence is not ruled out here. It's just that this simple model tells you a starting point.
Is between a boson pair, a hole pair, and a triplet, is that attractive or repulsive interaction?
Again, there's a repulsive interaction in this model between the hole pairs and the triplets. No. The energy, actually on a plaquette you can see it, the energy of a hole pair triplet state is much higher than a hole pair singlet state. That's just solving the Foresight problem.
Separated hole pair and triplet. That's the question. Whether there's an attractive interaction between them.
I don't think there's an attractive, but we have to talk about that. I think the hole pairs and the triplets repel. That's actually in the model, but also in the microscopic model. But we have to discuss that. Okay, so think about that. Okay, so if one wants to do better than mean field theory, one has to also add the quantum fluctuations in this regime. The quantum fluctuations grow because the other parameter comes down. So both quantum fluctuations of the superconductor and quantum fluctuations of the antiferromagnet are important as a transition. But what I want to get to is that there is a spin structure factor, which is just the energy of these triplet magnons. At the pole, at energy delta S, delta S goes like 2 times square root of mu. Therefore, delta S squared does increase with rho S and Pc in agreement with experiments. And as I said, this comes out very simply from mean field theory.
But why is it only seen in superconductor?
Ah, that's because in the antiferromagnet it's condensed. So you have two spin waves. These are the three magnons that condense.
Okay.
There's nothing.
So you would say that when you go to the normal state, the fermions or something has to broaden this, and that's
yeah,
really the theory.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. This is the experiments I don't need to show you. Showing it comes down. And now I want to come back to the original problem I set out to understand this. So this is the paper I was sending you. It's really what goes in is the model that has hole pairs hopping, magnons hopping, and interactions between the hole pairs and the magnons, and the fact that the magnons have a well-defined pole at some energy, so therefore they have a bottom of a band, and there's a threshold of creating two magnons. Now, to treat the SNS junction, I'm using a bit of a different approach in KBT. I'm not thinking of a semiconductor with well-defined quasi-particles in the region, but I'm thinking of the whole region in the center as contributing to a tunneling action, and out of this tunneling action, I'm integrating out the left and the right charges, and I'm leaving the magnons. So the degrees of freedom I get rid of are just all the charge degrees of freedom in the center, leaving me with an effective action of charge degrees of freedom for the left, right, and the magnons. So this expansion in terms of powers of boson operators would give me some coefficient which at low energies I can take to be a constant, not energy dependent. And this is a tunneling Hamiltonian. Now in the tunneling Hamiltonian, I'll keep essentially the same number of particles coming in from one side going into the other side, which is assuming that there's particle conservation in the center, i.e. it's not a superconductor in the center. The other thing I'm assuming is no broken anti-ferromagnetic symmetry in the center, and therefore the only objects that can be created from this vertex are magnon pairs, because that's a single. You can't create a single magnon.
Kuiper pairs are zero center mass objects, right. And in any one series, these pi modes are zero mass momentum pi objects.
Right.
So what provides this pi momentum in these tunneling?
That's also okay, because first of all, there's no conservation of momentum in this direction because it breaks, right? It's very local in X space. But the most important thing is that I'm creating a magnon pair that is restricted by symmetry of the spin. I am assuming no spin broken symmetry. So I can only create pairs, and that's important also to explain the energy in the result, as you'll see. So my overall tunneling is any number of powers of bosons from the left, any powers of bosons to the right, and I'm taking the lowest order magnon operator, which is n dot n, and that will give me the magnon creation. So how do I, I actually keep this derivative of the action, or this T I keep as a free parameter. That's very difficult to determine. That's something that has to do with the properties of this iron dope info in the center and with the geometry. But besides those free parameters, which will give you the magnitude of the effect, the rest is simple. These bosons on both sides should be taken in perturbation theory at the condensate. So you just condense them and get the condensate value, some power. And the magnons at second order perturbation theory for the current will give me a essentially convolution of two structure factors. And here, as you see, I'm estimating this integral by knowing that these are poles with essentially the known dependence of the pole on momentum and wave vector, and I get, as you see, a one-dimensional integral over qx, which is not conserved. I'm assuming qy is conserved. So I get a one-dimensional density of states, which has a square root singularity, very similar to the S-wave VCS. And that will give me, when I just plot this on the background, this is a singular part of the current, on the background of a large current that comes from nodal quasiparticles and all the other stuff that's going across, the singular part will have square root singularity, which when I take the derivative dv dI will give me peaks at exactly the energies of the following process. In order to create two magnons, in other words, two delta S, I need to have n times 2 eV. So my eventual relation is that V is equal to delta, not 2 delta, divided by n. Okay, so the first peak would be actually at the magnon resonance.
Okay, why do you need pairs? I mean, this pi mode is a pair of quasiparticles, right? Even in SO5 is a pair of quasiparticles.
Right.
So why can't you just inject a Kuiper pair into a
spin
single
conservation
pair?
The pi mode has spin 1.
Oh, I see.
There were some erroneous papers in the literature, in the web, I guess, saying that you can excite a single pair with a...
Why do I need SO5 to...
Okay.
Think about tunneling pairs?
Yes.
Pairs?
No. The reason I'm using it to detect SO5 is because it's the simplest four boson, actually two boson in this case, picture. I need two bosons, right? I need the charge holes to go across, and I need the magnons. So you can say I can write a horribly complicated diagram, but eventually sum up to some RPA thing representing the magnon and some RPA thing representing the Kuiper pair, but I just don't like that formalism. I like to deal with sharp bosons rather than collective, you know, RPA type.
Physically,
it's the same thing.
Just think about, I mean, the physics is just telling the Kuiper pairs converting into...
Yes,
magnon.
Yes, yes.
What's the advantage
of that? As I say, I'm writing a theory only with the bosons. I'm not putting in all the complications of particle hole excitations. It's a theory of collective, quantum collective nodes. There's nothing more than that. No magic there. I mean, what other approach would you suggest? To get this, I mean, this is the basic minimum of the, what's going on. I think Cooper pairs, I don't allow the Cooper pairs to dissociate. This is the difference between KVP and the previous. I don't want the Cooper pairs to dissociate, so we treat them as bosons, and I don't want the magnons to dissociate, so treat them as bosons.
What is the two SO5? You have two bosons. Right.
Okay.
You have a boson that represents Cooper pair and a boson that represents magnon.
You're absolutely right. The name is bad.
It's predicted, so it will be described.
Right. I have a transparency on that. Do you want me to show it? Okay. Actually, anticipating that question.
But you have iron impurities in this barrier, right?
So okay, maybe this will clear up some.
No, but you have iron impurities in this barrier, right? So those could provide your spin flipping.
Okay, that's a very tiny.
No, but you said that
that will go like the moments of the whatever is in there. This is a tiny effect. The insulating barrier is of order a few angstrom. How many moments do you have there?
Suppose you told us that you changed the barrier
it's
and the effect.
10, 20 angstrom. What?
I asked you the question. You said they changed the barrier and the effect is the same. This effect does not depend on the
right,
nature of the barrier.
Yeah, I actually asked the question. But
wait, that was about those peaks. I thought you were answering about the pseudo gap. So you see these peaks at n equals 1, 2, 3, or dips in the tunneling conductance in
I don't
barriers
that
have not. People do.
In
barriers that aren't iron.
Yeah, that's what they told me. There's a literature that I didn't completely investigate of other experiments there, but it was done with other normal so-called.
The essence you're explaining now is a multiple tunneling of Cooper pairs, and they add up to 1 mag, to 2 mag at the end of the day.
Right. That's all. That's all. Okay, now I'm getting some flack for things I didn't do, so.
Makes sense.
But I want to explain, because it seems like there's a problem of misconception in the field of what is SO5 theory.
It's all one at a time. Yeah.
These magnons are existent.
Totally true.
So let me kind of just explain what's going on, because there's this is a tutorial on things that went on that had made a lot of controversy and stuff. The SO5 theory was essentially a weakly interacting theory. It was a theory that you could write down with a model like a TJU with small u. The projected SO5 is a theory essentially that would derive from the Hubbard model at large U. And here, double occupation is projected out. So you see the Hilbert space different. Now, in the SO5 theory, the model was cooked up so that it will have SO5 symmetry, i.e. commute with all the generators of SO5, written in terms of electron operators. In the projected, there's no SO5 symmetry, okay? So we'll make that clear. Why is it called projected SO5? Because you take okay. So there's a concept here that survives, and that's the superspin order parameter. The superspin order parameter is essentially a five vector that, in this theory, rotates freely between the two phases, signaling antiferromagnetism and superconductivity. But it has a fixed length in most of the series because you can work in a representation if there's a quantum symmetry that preserves the length. And here, the superspin or the parameter is the same. It has still five components, but it's not fixed length. It's a soft spin model. Okay? And in fact, this is very important because we know the superfluid stiffness decreases with x. That was not in the SO5 theory. So toward the Mott transition, the order parameter was essentially staying the same, while we know it should go down, so it missed essentially the Hubbard fitting. Now, we've got some other things wrong, like here it has four Goldstone modes, and in the doped case it has four Goldstone modes because SO5, so it has four modes. And we know that in the antiferromagnet there should be only two modes, spin waves, and in a doped there's four bosons. These are the bosons I talked about. So, therefore, the criticism that was voiced by Martin Breiter and Bastian and Anderson that this really cannot describe a transitional Mott phase was correct. This doesn't get right to Mott phase. This, however, does. This also gets the correct bosonic mode, And the only thing it's missing, and this is something that is currently under work, is how is it interacting with the low-lying Fermi excitations near the nodes? That's an important question because a lot of experiments are looking at those fermions, but I claim that doesn't invalidate the basic results of keeping those fermions out for the collective modes, especially the kind of modes that give you singular behavior in the spin and in the SNS junction response. So now comes the question, point that I'm...
make sure I understand. You assume you have a sharp mode in this spin-spin correlation mode, right?
Yeah.
So this is not this charge to prime those.
No, just magnons.
Okay, so this is an important distinction.
Is that why it is a soft spin mode? Is that part of your amplitude fluctuation?
Well, the reason you have three spin modes, the three magnons...
You're saying this is a soft spin mode?
No, the soft spin is for the statics. It's for the phase diagram. The actual size of the order parameter, the superconducting phase, is not constant. It changes with doping. This was not in the SO5 theory, but it comes out here, as we saw. The phase diagram comes out very nicely. So...
Also, I disagree with your last point. It's actually not missing the nodal fermions, and we believe, in fact, that this is a very, very nice, very important test of SO5 theory. So basically, what we say is, if you take the SO5 rotation and you take the experiments of various people on the superconducting nodal fermions and gap features, and you just rotate this by just this very simple old still valid rotation with the pi operator, you get a gap feature in the antifermion, which reflects a D-wave-like symmetry, which is actually seen in the Shen data, and it's even in accordance with the magnitude of the modulation on the antifermion at the gap, which is in fact of 10 larger than the superconducting gap, and this is due to the projection.
Yeah. Okay.
And we believe that this is actually a very simple proof of SO5, and I would like to see any microscopic theory which has been discussed here which provides this very simple relation, because I can prove this connection in two lines. It's a very simple pi-rotation analytical argument.
But you still need to put the fermions in. My God, this theory, my conventional SO5 has no fermions whatsoever. You have to put the fermions.
Yeah, but I'm telling you that we've extended it to fermions.
If you consider the vector term.
So where's the fifth?
No, here you have four Goldstone nodes.
I know, but you have five.
5 degrees of freedom.
5 degrees of freedom, and there you only have four.
Right.
So where's the fifth?
The amplitude of delta is not fluctuating.
Yeah. I'm quite a bit confused. The original merit of SO5 is by invoking that symmetry, you can protect and make sure the charge to pi node being a sharp resonance.
Okay.
Now you are talking about a totally different.
Right. So
to what extent we have.
This is the beauty of this field. I mean, there's different opinions. I think what my philosophy is, okay, coming, let's say, from quantum magnetism, it's not the symmetry that really matters, it's the degrees of freedom that you want to keep. Let's say you want to do the XXZ model, okay? So it's useful to talk about SU2 spins. Let's say to discuss a superconducting solid transition or superfluid solid. So actually, you don't want it to be symmetric. You want it to have symmetry breaking, you put a field, and you get a spin-flop transition, and you can study phase separation and effects and so on. So this is the concept of superspin of five order parameters is what I think was a very important tool. This superspin creates the low-lying bosonic modes that apparently are important experimentally. And now, out of those modes, after you project, a few are left, but they are still the ones that are important for the low energy degree of freedom. Phase fluctuations and magnon.
Also, am I allowed? Also, I'm basically in your camp to really make a statement which clarifies this. I do believe the symmetry is very important, and it's actually conserved in the static correlation functions, and it is preserved as a proximity in this conduction between the anti-ferromagnetic water parameter reflecting the gap symmetry in the anti-ferromagnet and the superconducting water parameter reflecting the gap parameter symmetry in the superconductor. And this is tested by photo emission and is, if SO5 is correct, a very simple D wave to magnitude of D wave in relation between the two gaps. And this is seen in experiments. So from my point of view, symmetry is very important and should not be washed under the table.
So now to summarize, I have an experimental test that I think is non-trivial and actually would be good to do anyways. And this is shot noise.
So, back to the issue of the resonance. If there is no symmetry, now it's going to be some broad excitation. There's nothing to protect it, right?
In the theory without the fermions.
In the theory, in your projected theory, there is no reason for the time law to be sharp.
If you have, let's say, there are only these boson modes.
Yes.
And they, at the mean field level, acquire a gap. You say that gap is not protected against decay into nodal quasi particles.
There is no symmetry principle.
Right. And it's really not protected completely against decay into nodal quasi particles. So, it will be protected. Actually, no. As you come close to the transition, that gap energy goes to zero.
This isn't true. The pi wave vector doesn't connect nodal quasi particles. So how does the thing decay? Even in anyone's theory, it wouldn't decay, right?
Yeah, you could say that. Well, there's a spin one excitation.
So here just decouples from the rest and just simply lives its own life?
No, there's coupling between all the modes. There are four interacting bosons. Mm-hmm. They interact with fermions. Okay, so in principle, you have a soup. However, I claim that this soup is actually quite thin. So the interactions that are left over between these bosons.
Okay, what I understand is that have a system where there is no symmetry connecting these modes anymore.
Yeah.
Now, either one of these modes decouples completely for some reason,
yeah,
as you said, because there is no matrix element.
Yeah.
Or it's going to decay.
Yeah, you're right. Both possibilities, but the fact that it's such a very sharp resonance is an empirical fact that shows that the interaction.
I'm not discussing the experiment, I'm discussing your theory.
No, yeah, there's no protection. I mean, I don't believe there's any protection because you know that some of the materials actually don't show the pi resonance so sharp and they have other stripes and incremental structures. So.
But isn't there a system that has an experience?
Yeah.
You change the doping, then you see it.
I have a very good test. Okay, so let's just show the test and we'll show. In the BTK, there were both even and odd contributions. Okay, you could let me go back to the BTK. And here, I don't want to allow the odd. So, in the BTK, there were these processes and these processes. Here I claim only these processes are left because I'm not allowing, by saying that we're in a pseudo-gap regime and when looking at singular collective excitations, I'm only looking at cases where pairs of electrons crossed and there was no dissociation. So therefore, there is a measurement of charge that was done on normal conventional niobium junctions that could be used in this case. That experiment, beautiful experiment, very nice theory too, is similar to actually measurement of charge and shot noise in quantum Hall effect, was looking at how the noise goes up as you lower the voltage below the gap. So this is twice the gap. When you hit twice the gap, you're blocking essentially single electron transfer. So the only transfer that is allowed is mostly a Cooper pairs, charge 2. And every time you reduce the voltage, you block another channel. But notice that in the BTK, once you block this channel, then you block that channel, then you block this channel and that channel, and every time you block a channel, one less electron is passing. So the charge differences in the theory and in the experiment for conventional superconductors showed jumps of E. Okay, this is the theory done by several groups, Sweden and Stony Brook. The expected charge E, of course, are very difficult to see. They only see the first jump. They have to really, in order to get these jumps, I think they have to do a derivative measurement here. But anyways, that's the theory, that every time you cross another Andreev peak, it'll go by E.
What's the left axis?
This is voltage. Mm-hmm. This is noise divided by 2EI, which is charge in the short noise. So measuring differences of charge 2E will reflect the fact that the...
So the darker curve is what is theory or is experiment?
Both of them, okay. This is experiment, this is theory.
Oh, okay.
So that was done on super, and I, you know, really would like experimentalists to give it some attention.
So the whole point of this argument is to show that the data on the YVCO films is not due to multiple Andreev reflections.
Yeah.
That's what you're arguing now.
I'm arguing here that multiple Andreev reflection is out, but not just that. The whole BCS theory, in a sense, is not a good way of treating all this problem.
How did you get these many pairs crossing the logic some kind of multiple Andreev process?
Well, you can divide, I mean, the multiple Andreev process is really a big diagram, if you want, coupling Cooper pairs and final state excitations, yeah. Right? It's just a way of doing that.
You can't have something like two Cooper pairs crossing and you create one magnum.
You can't have that. You can have three Cooper pairs creating two magnums.
You can have creating two magnums.
Right.
But is that again some kind of projective matrix on
it? The process, okay.
Three coherent states of these three
Yeah, let me explain something I guess I didn't explain well. This is written in terms of essentially a vertex where I don't really know, I don't really care how these vertices are formed. They could be Green's function. It doesn't matter. This is a vertex.
This is a vertex.
This is a vertex. Now, the BTK is also a vertex. What's something that I guess people are not always aware of. A free electron gas, as far as the Cooper pairs go, is an interacting medium. Okay, that's why actually nonlinear optical effects in electron gas. It's free for the electrons, but not for the Cooper pairs. So what really goes on is all these diagrams that I guess look like this, and then they look like that, and you can write it as essentially a big, you know, I guess it'd be like that. Some kind of a interacting diagram full of electron Green's functions in normal state that produces the Cooper pair transmission and the creation of the final state, which is the tubular quasi-particle. Here I'm just replacing all these diagrams with a very simple vertex between bosons, which you could write in terms of electron Green's functions as horrible complicated diagrams. But there, I'm just saying that there is an interaction region. There's, and the T that I didn't really calculate is representing that vertex. All I care about is selection rules of spin, charge, and energy conservation. That's all I'm putting in. Don't need much more to get the position of the peaks and the singularity. So, but here's a prediction that does not depend on any of the calculations. And this prediction says the following. These peaks, you see, the first peak appears at the magnon energy, is not a peak which gives you 1E, but 2E. So the noise should jump 2E at the first peak. That's where the magnon is, it's around 40 MeV. And it keeps jumping at 2E, while the BTK jump at 1E. Now this, I think, could be distinguished. However, one has to notice that in order to get this jump, really an integration of a derivative has to be done very close to the jump itself, because there's the noise actually will have, I think, a background, a smooth background, but something that could be subtracted. but it will have a background that has to be subtracted to get these jumps. So the process here, as I say, is just moving two holes at a time and not one hole at a time. And this would be a test of the idea that the charges, even above, even not in the superconducting state, because we're now moving charges through, if you want, the resistor, are still paired below the pseudo gap, and that's the way it is.
Do you need to study this in this geometry? What if you just study the Chapman in the pseudo gap state? What does it look like?
Above TC?
Yeah, above TC, just a chunk of the pseudo gapped material. Just study the shot noise.
I guess I'll ask, what is there to subtract? Here you have a peak, so you can subtract what is before and after the peak. But the question in the supergap, to get the number of, if there were no nodal quasi particles and we just have the Cooper pairs that can't decay to anything, I would say the charge 2E should come out. But
I'm a bit afraid of saying. If you have a shot noise in a resistor, like a piece of copper or something, you can tell it it's charge E, can't you?
Yeah, that's what they did in the quantum Hall effect versus integer versus fractional. If you go to very low temperatures to get rid of the temperature noise, the Johnson noise, and life is not very easy there.
But
this you could do at zero temperature in principle. What?
You need a special amplifier that would particular.
Yeah. So I don't know if this rules out, I mean, less kind of a measurement than any other theories that were proposed. Of child E carrier, but anyway, it's a good experiment. So let me conclude. So again, the projected theory has four bosons, model for undergroup group rates. The mean field theory gives the antiferromagnetic and the superconducting phases and their order parameters and magnon gaps. SNS junctions claim that the Andreev peaks come from the antiferromagnetic resonance. So actually, materials that don't have it, this theory would not predict to see any peaks in, I guess, the lanthanum materials where the antiferromagnetic resonance is broadened. So only IFCO and the others. The I singular has this relation of the voltage to the antiferromagnetic resonance gap. And the charge 2E at the short noise will be a test of the theory. And here's some work in progress done by deriving actually the projected SO5 plus nodal fermion. The four boson model with the nodal fermions and the Hubbard model is getting underway with L-Daltman. And there's an idea that the stripes could be explained in the four boson model simply, or the incommensurate nature of the spin and perhaps charge fluctuations. But just an interacting hard-core boson model. But this is still in progress. And Hanke's group is very busy doing large-scale simulations of this model on large lattices. So we'll see what that gives. Okay. Yeah, that was the original starting point, that it moved like the superfilter. Two or three different dopings, and they, yeah, it goes down with PC, that's generally. No, they didn't correlate it. Not the same samples, not the same experiments. The correlation with the magnon gap is just by knowing what the neutrons see.
Do you expect these things to be as sharp as they are? I mean, just based on the neutron data. They look pretty sharp.
The neutron is pretty sharp too, but no, I didn't. No. Look, the neutrons have their own resolution problems. I don't know what their resolution limit is. I heard at the time that their resolution limit of the neutron was bigger than what they expect the peak to be. So it's not inconceivable that it's sharper than the signal. But
So if you expect momentum is considered parallel to the boundary? I mean, wouldn't that give you a big broadening if you could create magnons with sort of significant transverse?
Yes.
I mean, is it reasonable to think that the momentum is considered parallel to the interface?
To some degree. But what will help me is the non-dispersiveness of the magnon peak. The magnon peak seems to be very, very weakly dispersive, at least near the way, place where its weight is maximum. So then inaccuracy in your QI would not wash out the singularity. But that's, okay, I don't have any.
So, this is also a theory of the neutron resonance peak. How do you explain the fact that you just have a curve which is the same shape, just flowing in the oscillator
structure? Okay, this is part of the stuff about incommensurate stuff. An idea that hasn't been worked out yet, that in fact, you have really something like a shift of the wave vector away from pi pi to some small incommensurate distance, which will reflect tendency to order not at pi pi, like a Rotron minimum, some kind of a. Okay, for hardcore bosons, that was saying. Hardcore bosons, let's say in the continuum, you have a Rotron minimum, that's a superfluid, which reflects nothing to do with any underlying lattice, just reflects the density of the bosons and where it would order if it's solidified. So the idea is that the charges, the same ideas, I guess, derived from the people from the stripes are saying, the charges would like to order at some distance which is related to their density, and the spins will follow because of that happening. So this is if you want, like a Rotron minimum in the spin. And the spin correlator.
Yeah, so why does that mean that when you do a neutron scattering, you basically see a curve whose width is not changing, it's just the height is growing.
Ah, this is now the function of temperature?
Yeah.
I haven't done that theory. The little I thought about why the weight is changing as a function of doping is simply
temperature.
Function of temperature. I haven't worked it out.
Say we can continue this over time.